This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 10th of June 2013 on Monocle 24. Culture is brought to you in association with Paradores de España. Hello and welcome to the 87th edition of Culture with me, Robert Bounds. We're going boldly into today's show, ladies and gentlemen. We're heading via Greenwich, that cosy, leafy home to some of the shiniest telescopes, sextants and time itself, to space.
It isn't just about science and learning new things, it is about looking out and thinking, oh my God.
Employing another pun on nautical tackle, we'll head to Barcelona to celebrate 20 years of the world's preeminent electronic music festival. That'll be Sonar.
We've been moving ahead. There's been a huge evolution in the format of the festival, in the contents itself, and always on the way that how technology has been advancing and moving on all these years.
And we'll head to Adelaide to investigate how working in a team, even if you're a miserable, solitary old writer like I am, can bear exotic fruit.
There's so many stories out there of people who came to a particular point of view or developed a particular character or developed a particular plot line in conversation.
Plus, we'll chat to go-between and solo legend Robin Hitchcock. We'll go bananas and guaraná with a feisty Midori House session from two of Brazil's most energetic groups, Os Nelsons and O Quadro, and we'll dig a minute of sound from the Red Bull Music Academy in New York City. That's all here. Jeez Louise, that's all here on Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. First of all, music time from Bahia, a couple of troops of beat-toting Brazilians who are mixing up some of the traditional sounds with some that are all about bass culture, sound systems, noise, you got it. Two groups, Os Nelsons and O Quadro, were in London recently for a big Sound Clash event, and they came and warmed up with us here at Midori House, relax and realise that this sound is the product of a lot of thought and crossing of genres and all that jazz. See what you think. First up, this is Os Nelsons with Atual.
Já conhece, vai rodar o Brasil, Japão. O cangaço vem chegando pra virar a multidão. Pico bronze, pico roots, cura terror ao corão. Pega a menina, cintura fina, traz pro meio do salão. Jasmina Piricão. Atual, atual. Diversidade tá na parada, consequência da influência. Simplicidade, hora marcada pra taca fogo, joga cês. Taca, taca fogo, taca mais, taca mais. Esquenta o flow de novo, chama ela, mostra como faz. Taca, taca fogo, taca mais, aumenta a frequência. Pra cima, solta o corpo pra entrar no clima. Do clima, e pelo aumenta a autoestima, estima. Chega agora nela então, em cima, em cima. Você vai se joga pra cima, pra cima, pra cima. Só tô pra entrar no clima, clima, clima. Primeiro trapeça autoestima, estima. Chega agora nela então, em cima, em cima. Você vai se jogar. Mistura fina marrom com menina, tudo isso combina. A com melanina confirma pele bronzeada. No mar, na piscina, sempre na balada. Tudo isso fascina, chega, brilha, mina, que sina. Te pegue você, derrete no flow, só pra me envolver. Tá meu som, pra minha atenção ter, vem logo o frisson. Vou ficar na minha aqui, só tomando a janão. Que, manda. Puiô! Escuta! Mistura fina marrom com menina, tudo isso combina. A cor melanina confirma pele bronzeada. No mar, na piscina, sempre na balada. Tudo isso fascina, chega a brilhar a mina que ensina. Te pegue você, derrete no flow, só pra me envolver. Escuta meu som, pra minha atenção ter, vem logo o freio. Fica na minha aqui, só tomando xandó. Quem mandou do bom, senta aqui do lado. Sempre que tem cima pra cima. Solta o corpo pra entrar no clima, do clima. Primeiro trometa autoestima, estima. Chega agora nela então, em cima, em cima. Você vai se jogar pra cima, pra cima, pra cima. Solta o corpo pra entrar no clima, do clima, do clima. Primeiro trometa autoestima, estima, estima. Chega agora nela então, em cima, em cima. E você vai se jogar. Todo
todo mundo já conhece. Vai rodar o Brasil, Japão. O cangaço vem chegando pra pirar a multidão. Fico blocks, fico roots, cura terror, algorão. Pega a menina, cintura fina e traz pro meio do salão. Taca, taca fogo, taca mais, esquenta o flow de novo. Chama ela, mostra como faz. Taca, taca fogo, taca mais, aumenta a frequência da resistência e perde a resistência. Chega pra cima, pra cima. Solta o corpo pra entrar no clima, do clima. E ver o trauma da autoestima, estima. Chega agora nela então e tima, tima. Você vai se jogar pra cima, pra cima, pra cima. Solta o corpo pra entrar no clima, do clima, do clima. E ver o trauma da autoestima, estima, estima. Chega agora nela então e tima, tima. Você vai se jogar.
Thank you.
That was Os Nelsons with Atual, and we'll hear more from them and, of course, from El Cuadro later on in the show. As we know from Star Trek, space is the final frontier. But maybe the only way to make sense of it is to bring it close to home, to stage an exhibition about it, to shine a light on exploration, scientific endeavour, astrological eye straining into the depths of space, the limits of the known unknown. In the shadow of that formerly groundbreaking longitude-nailing observatory, the Royal One atop the hill in Greenwich, sits the National Maritime Museum. Their big summer show is Visions of the Universe, a fitting title for a show at the end of the Docklands Light Railway, the final frontier indeed. It's a rare pleasure on a sunny Wednesday morning in early June to come to the National Maritime Museum, getting out of the DLR station at Cutty Sark and feeling like you've come on a trip, feeling like you've come to the countryside, feeling that you've escaped central London. You can probably hear behind me the sound of lawnmowers and the sound of school trips, which are refreshing things to be competing with other than the hustle and bustle of central London. We've come down to Greenwich to see a show called Visions of the Universe at the National Maritime Museum. An apt place to have it, I guess. We're in the shadow of the Royal Observatory up on the hill, and I guess we're going to go inside and have a look at some of the images that have been got from the cousins of the original telescope at the Royal Observatory. Inside, the show is Space Dark, lit by the planets it talks about, shows pictures and moving images of, lit by the night sky, you might say. The sound design's intriguing too. Composed by students at the nearby Trinity Laban Conservatoire of Music and Dance, its beeps and bleeps and sonar and music and snatches of radio conversation between space and Earth, come in Houston and all that. The show starts with four images of the Orion Nebula to show how depicting space has changed from a telescope-inspired sketch to the most advanced multi-camera, ultra-zoom, million-megapixel state of today's art. The show is a popular as well as a scientific understanding of space, and it's interesting to see the play between fact and fiction in our ideas of space, how science has influenced science fiction, and how beautiful space is, how it and its mystery have been an eternal subject for artists. Turner Prize-winning Wolfgang Tillmans shows alongside scientific images of the sun, eclipses, supernovas, nebulae, white dwarfs, and the endless fascination that they wrote poems and made records about, the dark side of the moon. Dr. Marek Kukula is the public astronomer for the Royal Observatory at Greenwich and one of the curators of this show. What a great talker he is. How space seems closer to home with him at the helm.
We live in an extraordinary time in human history where we're finding the answers to questions that people have puzzled over for thousands of years. In our lifetimes, those answers are coming. But when we get those answers, they are raising new questions that we couldn't have imagined. It's an adventure, and I want to share that adventure with as many people as possible.
You talked on your tour about the idea of
beauty and simply reportage, reporting what the universe looks like. It's a strange thing. It's a lucky thing when some of these things are so beautiful or look like our idea of the heavens as they were painted by people that had never looked through a telescope, by almost biblical painters, by classicists. It's an amazing thing.
It is fascinating, that sense of awe and beauty that we get from looking at these things. There's no reason, I suppose, why these things, which were invisible to us for the vast majority of human history, so they've had no impact on our evolving sense of what beautiful things should look like. And yet, suddenly now that we're able to see them with Hubble and other telescopes, they are beautiful. And maybe that says something very deeply philosophical about the way the universe is constructed. I don't know. It's fun to speculate. But the fact that we find the universe beautiful is a wonderful thing. And again, the beauty is an angle that I really wanted to come through in the exhibition. It isn't just about science and learning new things. It is about looking out and thinking, oh my God.
It's amazing, presumably, that some of those first sketches that were done after looking through a telescope were so correct. For you, I wonder if it's a greater pleasure to look at a sketch of something, a fake, sort of an idea of the fakeness of something, or whether it's lovely to look at the real thing, the most up-to-date pictures.
Both. Working somewhere like the Royal Observatory, I do have a sense that there have been astronomers working here for literally centuries, and some of them did not have the benefits of photography, certainly modern digital photography that we take for granted now. So their visions of the universe were very much shaped by what they could see through the telescope and what they could record by hand, by drawing, by painting. We have in our archives some really beautiful, exquisite drawings and paintings that astronomers in the 18th, 19th centuries did. The accuracy of them is stunning. They were very, very good draftsmen and very committed to recording accurately what they could see. But of course, the human eye and the human brain are not always entirely faithful recording devices. And so they recognized that photography, when it came along, was the answer to some of their prayers, that it was a tool that would allow them to accurately record things without that chance of human error creeping in. So there's a continuing story, I think, a continuing dialogue between astronomy, photography, and art about how we represent the universe around us and how we respond to that.
And finally, I wanted to ask you about some of the language that you've used to describe the pictures that we see in the show. It's a funny thing deciding what adjectives to use. A lot of them are the language that maybe you'd use to describe the heavens. There's a personality to these planets. One which is particularly amusing is Venus being the goddess of love. And then, of course, once you've got through the cloud and the methane and whatever surrounds the planet, you realise that the planet that's named after love is actually a scarred, horrible, fiery hellhole. And you use words like hellish and mysterious and these things which are sort of nebulous and loaded terms. Is that something you chose to do?
Absolutely. I am a scientist, and when we talk scientifically about things, we tend to be very careful about the words that we use and very precise meanings. And yet, when I look at these images, when I look at these places, when I combine the pictures with our knowledge of what's going on there, these are the adjectives that I automatically reach for. And I don't think any scientist would object to Venus being described as hellish. It is a terrible place. Temperatures of 450 degrees centigrade, crushing atmospheric pressure that would squash you to the floor, and clouds of sulfuric acid. What other adjective could you use? But other things, words like ethereal, visionary, they do spring to mind because that is what they look like. And I think as scientists, we are taught to be objective, and we strive to be objective, and of course that's a good thing, but we are still human beings, and when we step back and have a human reaction to what we're learning and what we're seeing, of course we're going to respond with poetic language because the universe is extremely beautiful.
One of the key parts of the show is a huge multi-panel screen displaying panoramic pictures beamed back from the Mars Curiosity rover, at the moment kicking up space dust on the red planet. It's an amazing thing to behold, and Dr. Sanjeev Gupta of Imperial College London is one of the geologists behind all that Mars roving, and he's chuffed with the results.
We've been poring over these images over the last 6 months or so, but on small computer screens, and now to stand before it at a kind of a human scale and visualize this landscape and be able to imagine that you could actually be walking whilst we can see this, we can see these rock layers and this strange landscape, we don't actually know what's there. But perhaps in 9 months' time, we will actually begin to start our detailed exploration of the base of this mountain and work out, you know, where these layers were deposited and explore some of these beautiful gullies and canyons. So it's quite weird to think that we're not quite there yet.
I like it when a scientist, an eminent scientist, uses the word weird to sum up his feeling on it, but it is that thing. It does. It feels like we're watching a science fiction film here rather than looking at the actual surface of Mars.
Science is really about the unknown. Whilst we deal with facts, most of the time, that's the done deal when we finish the research. But most of the time we're dealing with things that we don't know, in particular with planetary exploration. We haven't a clue, generally, as to what we're looking at. We have guesses, we can make predictions, but until we start exploring and looking in detail, we don't know. And that's really the most exciting thing, is that there's this promised land. We have some ideas in those landscapes of what's there.
I wanted to ask you about the idea of reaching toward the horizon. It's obviously very possible in this, when you've got a rover on the surface of a planet, to be able to do that. But in terms of space generally, is it that idea of exploration always about pushing toward a next horizon?
It is, yes. Exploring that unknown. And for me, the other really exciting place is the satellite of Saturn, Titan, which is enshrouded in this atmosphere, opaque atmosphere, but recent discoveries from the Cassini mission have shown that when you look beneath that atmosphere, you can see rivers and lakes, but those aren't of water. Those are actually rivers and lakes made of methane and ethane. So it has Titan doesn't have a water cycle, it has a hydrocarbon cycle. So there's these wacky plans to, you know, actually land boats on these lakes on Titan and have hot air balloons basically traveling in this dense atmosphere to image that surface. So that's one goal. But for Mars, there's many, many other places that we would like to look at where there's clear evidence in the landscape for the action of water flow. And one of the reasons to do this on Mars is that because Mars doesn't have an active water cycle and doesn't have an active tectonic cycle, we actually have very, very old rocks preserved on the surface of Mars that perhaps aren't preserved on Earth. So in some ways, Mars holds clues to actually understanding Earth's early history, the early history of planet formation.
The show's a spellbinder, really. It's an exhibition of the beauty of the universe beyond our own, so it's not really art, but I dare anyone to come up with anything fictional that's more spellbinding than space. You might not expect to find the final frontier in a museum all about the waves and the depths, but those two words couldn't really be more about just what space is. For Monocle, in Greenwich, I'm Robert Bound. Well, there you go. And if you're headed to London, Visions of the Universe is on at the National Maritime Museum until the 15th of September. I'd heartily recommend a visit. And as you've heard there, Greenwich is a world away from the city centre. And we all love a good day out. This is Culture on Monocle 24, where next we'll be heading back down to Earth. But we're going to one hell of a party when we get there.
Awaken in a 15th century castle. Stroll through majestic medieval palaces, or enjoy the silence that reigns within the walls of former convents and monasteries. Select from 94 unique locations and explore Paradores de España for much less than you might imagine. Visit paradores.com and begin your trip today.
The Monocle app puts Monocle 24's pacey mix of current affairs, business, culture, and music in your pocket. Whether it's midnight in Marunouchi or sunrise in Sydney, tune in to our around-the-clock audio service live from Midori House. Or download and replay your favourite programmes using the Time Shift feature. Also at your fingertips, our complete global travel guide. Get all this and more on the go on the Monocle app.
Welcome back to Culture with me, Robert Bounds. We're from space. We're headed now to Spain because it's that time of year again. Yes, this week, thousands upon thousands of avid festival goers will converge on Barcelona for the Sonar Music Festival. Billed as the world's premier advanced music and media event, this year marks its 20th edition, giving the crowds and organisers more than enough reasons to celebrate under the sun. And well into the night, of course. They're not holding back for the celebrations, with a 12% increase in budget, capacity, and even a new location for Sonar by Day. Our man Liam Aldous talked to co-director Enrique Palau about the changes, the secret to their longevity, and how they've managed to stay at the cutting edge of what is increasingly a crowded festival circuit. Oh, and he might have snuck in a question about some of the antics backstage too.
"20 years is a long time in the festival circuit. How have you managed to get this far?"
"Well, it's a long way, but here we are. We started 2 years preparing the project from 92 to 94. Then we started as a very small festival. I think we achieved from the very beginning to be this global platform and meeting point for artists, audience, and media and industry around creativity and technology. And this is still the main concept of our festival. We've been moving ahead. There's been a huge evolution in the format of the festival, in the contents itself, and always on the way that how technology has been advancing and moving on all these years. You know, I mean, as we were explaining before, 94 internet didn't exist. So we were doing experimental shows with people using internet, artists using internet in 1995. Now the experimentation is going to be this time with mobility, with people using, you know, laptops, tablets, iPhones. This is going to be one of the main things and one of the main themes this year at the festival, on the use of technology. But the main goal, the main thing of ourselves working in this festival is reach and research for the newest talent all over the world, you know. And this is going to be the one that is going to be more visible, and I think is the aspect where make Sonar more recognizable, and the aspect that's one of the reasons that a lot of people is coming to Sonar is actually to discover. We believe that we need to explain something different every year, so there's hard work on the way we build the different contents, I mean the lineups and the other activities around the festival, and the way we present this, the way all the production is made, why this show is going to be before this other one or after. It's like a film, you know. We want to tell a story once a year for 3 days in Barcelona for all these music lovers and technology lovers that are coming to visit the festival.
What about the Sonars in Iceland and in Japan? How do they fit into the Sonar puzzle?
It's very exciting. We've been moving around the world now in 40 cities since 2002. And Reykjavik was the new one this year. Very, very good. I mean, half of the lineup was Icelandic artists. Enormous talent, amazing musicians. We bring four of them to the festival: Olafur Arnalds, Gluteus Maximum. Especially, I want to recommend to the people to check CZI, which is an amazing female vocal house band that will play in the new stage of Sonar Village. So these places like Reykjavik, Tokyo, are very good for us to reach new artists, new talent coming from these countries. Also, is a trip that we started this year with 9 cities in North America, the US and Canada, and then Reykjavik and Tokyo. It's something that at the end of this circuit, there's always Barcelona.
It's been 20 years, so obviously you've dealt with hundreds of artists over those 20 years. Who has been the most memorable?
Being on the last show of LCD Sound System on the main stage and James Murphy saying thanks to the festival, it's been one of my moments, because, you know, it's very hard to build all of this. So it's great that James was saying, you know, thanks to all of us and the audience that was having in front of him. Marcus at work playing an amazing set in the main stage and having the sensation that I was sitting in my sofa with an amazing hi-fi system. The quality, the sound quality of that show was absolutely amazing for me. I don't know, I probably would have 100 examples of memorable moments for, you know, personally at the festival. I just remember a few ones now.
Well, I have to ask this as well, who's been the most troublesome? Because I'm sure you've had to deal with a lot of big personalities over the years as well.
Yeah. The Bad Crystal Castles they basically killed their shows. I don't know what they wanted to do, but they turned that show on an unpleasant show, and I think they made the audience very, very angry, which I think is very unrespectful.
How so?
You know, they were kind of messing around and throwing things to the audience, stopping the show after 15 minutes. So let's forget about the bad one. The good one is Miss Grace Jones, that made us wait for quite a long until she won on stage. So everything, all the preparations were kind of tough before, during and after. But this is the good one because she won on stage and she played an amazing show. So all the suffering that we have, that people don't see, and we have it as an organization, it makes always sense when then the show or the artist is delivering to the festival and the audience, it's good and positive. So I'm not complaining.
So I guess the lesson is, if they're going to cause you a headache, just it's okay as long as the headache stops when they're on stage.
Exactly, yeah.
That was Enrique Palau, co-director of Sonar Music Festival, talking to Monocle's Liam Aldous. The 20th anniversary Sonar Barcelona kicks off this week. Just visit sonar.es for more details. Still to come in part two, we'll polish up our Portuguese for some more Brazilian beats from Os Nelsons on O Quadro. We'll hear how writers in Adelaide are coming out from their garrets for a bit of collaborative inspiration. We'll sit down with legendary musician Robin Hitchcock, and we'll soak up a minute of sound from one of New York's biggest cultural events. Why on earth would you go anywhere else for the next half hour? So first, we're back for some more of those Salvadorian urban beats. This time, it's O Quadro with Ta Amarrado.
Oh! Solta o corpo, solta o corpo. Roupa à prova de agulha pra boneco voodoo. Garamo pulsando, cebando na farofa de dendê. Caro e terreiro, nativo sorasteiro. Comer vela seja pra poder ver os caboclos descer. Meu ré, a ladainha presa, minha prenda. Bata patrangênico, quantidade rejeita na oferenda. Baiana malandra, rodando com saia de renda. Se for pra me pedir de tocar tambor, vá, me prenda. Meu corpo fechado, não quer dizer que eu sou tapado. Bola de cristal líquido não vai mostrar meu passado. Erva solta natural é coisa de Deus. Amor de bagulho industrializado é arte do diabo. Do lado de fora da igreja pregado no portão, uma placa me alertando, cuidado com o meu cão. Curso é uma edição, vou te ensinar alemão. Minha evolução eu busco agora, não vou esperar outra encarnação.
Tá amarrado em nome do quadro.
E mais bandingas cantiga pra espantar o seu mal olhar.
Tá amarrado em nome do quadro.
Vai de coelho que arranca ragamuffin pra tua dente de ar.
Tá amarrado em nome do quadro.
E mais bandingas cantiga pra espantar o seu mal olhar.
Tá amarrado em nome do quadro.
Vai de coelho que arranca ragamuffin pra tua dente de ar.
Vai de pato, mandalão. Na fé e no flow, a resistência do pai de santo contra o discurso do pastor. Mandiga na rima, MC entidade espírita quebrando
bala.
Na mão o microfone, uma cruz, o dente de alho. Preto velho sentado, sossegado, fumaça pro. Minha corrente aí sempre vai sendo bem. Positive vibration pra você.
Porque
também.
Deus é o justo, o resto é voodoo. Quem não for fiel,
vai tomar no.
Vai de reto, homem, que eu vou à torta e à direita. O nosso cego tá dado no laço e jogado no espaço.
Sabe, aceita o hip hop.
Offrindo lá encruzilhada, scratch batucada. Aplicando eletrochoques, os loucos tão solto, moldado a ferro e fogo. Calça big, dreadlocks. Pai Hans, pai Jeff, pai Freeza, pai de Mac. Invocando novos toques, universidade mística contra suástica. Pela alma nem clone nem flash.
Tá amarrado em nome do quadro.
Rimas mandingas, cantiga pra espantar o seu mau olhar.
Tá amarrado em nome do quadro.
Pé de coelho que arranca ragamuffin pra tua dente de ar.
Tá amarrado em nome do quadro.
Rimas mandingas, cantiga pra espantar o seu mau olhar.
Tá amarrado em nome do quadro.
Pé de coelho que arranca ragamuffin pra tua dente de ar.
Single.
Ataque aos seres da mob escura que não entende da parte das entidades da rua. Que não. Eu também tenho boca de sapo, não vai encontrar. Carrega a ruta na orelha pra me guardar. Folha sagrada, faço uso pra me libertar. De paciência e disciplina que eu vou me guiar.
Tá amarrado em nome do quadro.
Rimas bandingas, cantiga pra espantar o seu mau olhar.
Tá amarrado em nome do quadro.
Pé de coelho que arranca ragamuffin pra tua dente de ar.
Tá amarrado em nome do quad.
Rimas mandingas cantiga pra espantar o seu mal-olhar.
Tá amarrado em nome do quad.
Pé de coelho que arranca braga, meu filho, pra tua de tidiar.
That was O Quadro from Salvador with Ta Amarado, and you're tuned in to Culture with me, Robert Bound. To books now, well, the art of writing, to be precise. Co-working, finding some cheap space and getting together with other people who share your work passion, is a growing worldwide trend and certainly beats staring at the kitchen wall. Traditionally, visual artists have worked together in studio spaces, but now writers are finding that their profession doesn't necessarily mean being confined to a lonely garret. Writing in company can add that spark and get the muse working. Annie Hastwell visited a co-working space in Adelaide called Co-West, which opened at the end of last year. It's a formerly derelict building now fitted out as somewhere aspiring and published authors can rent a desk and mix, chat, and hopefully get some work done.
Luke is a taxi driver, down on his luck, in need of money, and he's offered a fare to a remote sheep station. The fellow who offers it to him, Pete, is quite menacing.
And well, it's a story about a woman who lives in Sydney who befriends an old Indian woman, and they decide to go to India together, and the old Indian lady dies before they can make the trip.
The book's called A Clearing, and it tells the story of two combatants in Vietnam. It starts from a particular encounter in 1969 when they meet, which is fatal for one of them. And
apparently everybody has a novel in them, just waiting to be written. But how hard is it to hide yourself away and actually write the thing? The key could be getting together with other writers. Author and professional writing tutor Rob de Kock found this old abandoned golf driving range and has turned it into a space where writers can feel at home.
Well, we like to call this the salon. It's a bit pretentious because it's a rather large conference type room, but it's a room where people would share their ideas or sit quietly amongst others to write what they wish to write.
Line is where it started. I come to the edge, we said, and they said.
The salon runs regular advice sessions too. Today, professional writer Sue Fleming is there to help Ryan Payne flesh out his story idea.
The themes that you're alluding to, gosh, that's the stuff of a very significant short story.
I think writing has a reputation of, you know, everybody's going to lock themselves up in some garret and come back 3 weeks later with a marvellous first draft. But there's so many stories out there of people who came to a particular point of view or developed a particular character or developed a particular plot line in conversation. And it was much more normal at various stages to, in the last 200 or 300 years, for people to sit down and share their material and to chat about the whole process of writing.
It doesn't have an ending, it doesn't really even have, it's kind of a beginning, I think. Yeah. But when I wrote it, I felt
there's
like
a large central table with positions for about 8 people and 2 cafe-style tables up against the window, again trying to fit in with the ethos of people who like to go down and make a coffee last all day at Starbucks and manage to write for that period of time. So they can come here instead.
So you've planned it with a fair bit of care for the different moods of the writer, it seems.
I just realised if you watch children or if you watch other writers at work, they seem to drift around. You may build a brand new house and a brand new writing space with a beautiful desk and clean it up every day and align your stationery and put your little tin in that corner, but you know, you'll probably find yourself writing at the kitchen table by the end of the day or even outside on the sun lounge. And it depends a bit on mood or whether you're rewriting or how you're feeling about the particular project you're on or whether you're taking that really much needed break every 90 minutes or so. It depends on that as to what space you want to use. So the concept of Co-West is that there are 3 different spaces that are available to anybody who books half a day or a day or even longer periods of time, and they all hopefully will tickle the muse in some way.
Upstairs is the loft, a quiet space where writers really get down to writing.
This is theoretically where the real work happens, but my children are letting me down today.
These are your published authors too. These are the stars of the show.
They are the stars of the show. The people have come here to do their second or third published works.
I'm Jane Ainslie. I try and come 3 to 4 times a week for a couple of hours. I have my own desk here which I've set up and I come in with the intention to write.
Jane's first book, Chai for Beginners, was picked up by a major Indian publisher. She's now on her second and happy to work in company.
Writing's a really lonely business, and once you start getting the rejection letters coming in for novels and things, it's good to just bounce off other writers who've had the same experience.
I'm Cameron Rains, and I'm the writer of the short story collection, The Colour of Kerosene.
Cameron's little outback thriller, The Colour of Kerosene, won the world's most lucrative short story award in 2008 and has recently been made into a short film. So what does he get out of coming to work in a cooperative space like CoWest?
It's great to get out of the house. I spend a lot of time at the kitchen table. I do all of my work with a pen and pad before putting it into the computer. And before I know it, a whole day is gone. I haven't spoken to anyone else. And it won't be until my children come home from school and my wife comes home from school teaching that I'll actually speak to someone. So to get out of the house and come to a space like this, it does give you that stimulus and just a break from the routine.
Yeah, after all these years, it went off today. It went off Tuesday to Curtis Brown.
Rob's just finished his own manuscript, the book he's worked on for several years. It's called The Clearing.
Well, they only want 3 chapters, and that in itself is very daunting. You know, this, I only want 3 chapters, please read the whole thing. But you're not doing the right job if you haven't got them in 3 chapters anyway.
Do you find it inspiring for your own work to be surrounded by aspiring writers and published writers?
Yes, of course it is. When Jane walked in, she had a novel in her hand. I mean, that's something I'm going, hang on, I want this. I want that glossy cover. I want that back cover photo. Of course it's like that. And I think the basic lesson you get from sharing information and lives of other writers is that every novel is a lie. Not in a sense that it's a piece of fiction. Of course it is a piece of fiction. Even autobiographical pieces are largely fiction. But no, it's a lie in a sense that that finished product is not how it started. That opening para may not have been the opening para originally. The opening chapter may not have been the opening chapter. That character could have been planned to go on a completely different route before he took hold of Jane's hands and started writing himself. So that's the lesson to learn, that the perfection you think you see was never like that at all. It was a bloody mess on a table somewhere and before that in somebody's head.
Co-working appears to be a buzzword in a working world slowly turning from competition to fruitful collaboration. Around 3,000 spaces like CoWest, often networked, sometimes franchised, are now open around the planet. For Monocle in Adelaide, I'm Annie Hastwell.
Thanks, Annie. And if you're sitting alone at a desk near Adelaide and can't quite get that book on the page, then visit cowest.com.au to find out more. You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where next we'll be sitting down with music legend Robin Hitchcock.
Discover a kingdom you will never want to leave, filled with so many unique experiences that a simple day is not enough to uncover them all. With 94 unique locations on offer, Paradores de España invites you to enjoy Spain at its finest, for much less than you might imagine. Visit paradores.com and begin your trip today.
In a region typified by change, Istanbul is in the middle of a renaissance of its own. Monocle Films visits the historic city to witness its contemporary metamorphosis.
Battles over the projected identity of Turkey on the landmarks of the city translate into protest. While disagreement over the future exists, pride in the changes is not in short supply.
Istanbul Inspired, a film about change in an ever-changing city on Monocle.com.
Welcome back to Culture on Monocle 24. Rock and roll has always been overpopulated by people keen to be perceived as mavericks, and most of them are nothing of the sort. Though Robin Hitchcock would be too modest to claim this or any other title for himself, he has assuredly earned it. His career has spanned more than four decades, earning him the admiration of a devoted cult following, if never quite a guitar-shaped swimming pool. Hitchcock's early work with psychedelic pathfinders The Soft Boys and his subsequent solo career have been a resonant, if understated, influence on generations of alternative rock royalty. He counts among his fans, friends and collaborators the likes of Led Zeppelin, REM, XTC, Gillian Welch, Neutral Milk Hotel, Nick Lowe and Johnny Marr. Hitchcock came to Midori House recently to discuss his latest solo album, Love from London, and getting to grips with the idea of being a 60-year-old rock singer with our man, Andrew Miller.
Los Angeles police, they come in different flavors, and history refuses to do you any favors.
First of all, the obvious question, or one of the obvious questions, I guess, about the new album, Love from London, sort of anchored it very much in this city. Why that title?
Well, it's a very literal one, Andrew. I realised most of them were love songs and that they were all written in London. not only that, but that I've been here most of my adult life whilst going somewhere else, you know. But this is the place I actually always return to, and most of my stuff is composed here and has been, you know, for ages, really, at least the last 30 years or more. So it seemed like a good kind of resume of the whole thing, really.
I love you, I love you, I love you. I love you, I love you, I love you.
When you put out a new album at this point, you have been putting them out now for something very close to 40 years. Do you sort of think of them as part of that catalogue, or do you approach each one as just an entirely new thing in and of itself with no relation to whatever's come before it?
I'd like to approach them all as new things. I know that they are part of a continuous chain, and because of that, I try and make each one as different as I can from its predecessor. Because the only thing that really justifies albums now, rather than just downloading a song you like, you know, is if the album itself has a mood. So what I'm hoping is that each time I complete a batch of songs, there is some sort of mood to that record. So you'll go, oh, yeah, I feel like Love from London, rather than, you know, I want to listen to a Robin Hitchcock track. Just as, you know, people would want to say, I want to listen to Astral Weeks rather than Van Morrison. Or I want to listen to Berlin rather than Lou Reed. And it may be that my great mood albums are long in the past. I don't know, but I know I'm compelled to keep churning this stuff out. Like anyone else you interview, you know, when it comes down to it, we make records because we've trained ourselves to make albums. We're part of that culture that came after Sgt. Pepper. Prior to that, it was you got to make a single. And if you're starting out now, if you're realistic and ambitious, you put it all into making a single. You wouldn't go into straight into, oh, man, I'm for album culture. But, you know, we come from 45 years of album culture, so that's what we do.
Stoned love, she kneels before the grave, a brave son who gave his life to save a slow gun. But hovers between the headstones and her eyes, or they penetrate her grieving.
When you have that mood in mind, do you allow that, or do you let that, I guess, govern your choice of musicians and collaborators? You have obviously collaborated with a lot of people in one shape or form, so there seems to be no shortage of musicians who are willing to take your call. How do you decide, or say specifically for this album, how did you decide what kind of backing you were going to assemble?
I just figured on who was around, and actually the producer, Paul Noble, and I, he's a friend I met in the pub a dozen years ago who knows everything about everything as far as music goes, but he's also met Vinnie Jones and the Pope, and, you know,
Vinnie Jones and the Pope?
Pretty much the same day, I think, you know, and he's worked with people like Gabriel. He was Gabriel's musical director, but he was also in a band called the Warm Jets. He was the man who gave the world the magic numbers and then kind of, you know, had to retreat from it. Paul's been in a lot of places. Anyway, he's by sort of British MD, and we couldn't find our usual mid-price studios were closed. And he said, why don't we just make the whole thing in my bedroom? I've got Abbey Road in there. So I opened the door, and sure enough, there it was on the wardrobe, is, you know, basically the brain power, the gigabytes of RAM and the equipment, you know, so just a couple of nice mics. And essentially, you might as well have Abbey Road Studio 3 in there, and there's no real drums even, but it's not like we've gone for a synthetic drum sound. Paul's just taken, you know, snare sounds and shakers from the library of sound. So all we had to bring in then was some vocalists, you know, singer friends of mine, and Jenny Adjayan, the cellist, who is really the sort of secret weapon of the record. So it's just extraordinary what sound comes from. You know, music's never looked like recording studios. You know, Sgt. Pepper doesn't look like Abbey Road Studio 2 or even Studio 1. Or Highway 61 doesn't look like, you know, wherever it was recorded out in New York or something. Even the Sun Studios and those RCA places in Nashville that are venerated because Elvis Presley recorded there, they don't look like all shook up. This record bears almost no relation to the smoky little room with the curtain drawn in Clerkenwell where we made the album. So that may not answer the question, but it sort of shows you how these things would turn out.
We're up to our necks in love, so right. We're up to our necks in love. Blame Dad.
You did talk recently, I think, about a kind of measure of relief that you'd never been, as you put it, burdened with a hit single.
Yeah. No.
Which reminded me of something Richard Thompson said when I interviewed him many years ago, and I asked him the stock question about the biggest break he thought he'd have, and he said, I don't have an American Pie. which he said, you know, it obviously could have happened.
Yeah.
But he said he feels relief that he's not up there all night thinking that the audience are all looking at their watch waiting for the song. Is that what you worry might have been different if the planets had lined up a bit differently for one of your songs?
I think that you, not to seem ungrateful for things I haven't got, but you would want to have at least a couple. If they're waiting for one song, then that is awful. I mean, even if it guarantees you financial and health security and decent quality of international travel for life, you know. But would you trade that for having to play the same bloody song every night? I don't know. Like Richard Thompson, I am not tethered to a song. And the songs of mine that are most popular are all ones I just avoid. So I'm assuming that the younger folk, the under 50s, will play my greatest flops. And then I can come on and do the stuff of mine I actually like.
And forgive yourself, then maybe you'll forgive me.
Thank you. That was Robin Hitchcock talking to Andrew Muller there. Robin's album Love from London is out now, and he's currently on tour playing dates in Spain, the UK and Norway over the next few weeks. Just visit robinhitchcock.com, and that's Robin with a Y, of course, for more details. Well, we're nearly out of time on this here culture show, but I'm delighted to say we have about 60 seconds left to squeeze in something special. It's had a bit of a hiatus recently, but is back this week in stellar form. Yes, that's right, I'm talking about A Minute of Sound, and today it comes from New York, where the 15th edition of the Red Bull Music Academy recently wrapped up. It's about much more than just performances. Alongside the gigs and club nights, there are various audiovisual installations, film screenings and Q&As with some of the biggest names in music spread out across the city throughout the month of May. Monocle's Georgina Godwin was there and sent us this sonic summary.
Thank you. about Can't Stop, Won't Stop.
I like this beat.
But it would be good to maybe even try to do that on screen before it gets printed out and floated around.
Is there something else playing? Not supposed to be playing? Happening right now?
No, it's normal.
That was a minute of sound from the Red Bull Music Academy in New York City, courtesy of Georgina Godwin. And that's just about all we have time for this week. Next week, I'll be giving you the lowdown on this year's Art Basel, and we'll hear how Arab Idol has got eyes glued to TV sets across the Middle East. You've been listening to Culture with me, Robert Bounds. My producer was Katie Bilbur, but she couldn't have done a goddamn thing without the impressive skills of Miss Holly Fisher. Time for one final song this week, all the way from Salvador, of course. This is El Cuadro with Fogos. Artificio para o principio a vista. Thank you for tuning in.
Partiu em mil pedaços no céu, provou os pés descalços no chão que se abriu, revelando assim o teu sabor. Correu de contra o vento do sul, tentou virar na esquina do mar, se perdeu, gelando assim o teu calor. Sol tem foguetes pro seu caminho vão. Voltem para casa com medo e sem razão. Joguem suas redes e arrastam para o céu. Velem para o cais, que o mar não dá pra peixe, não vai.
Rema, rema, e
nho.
Rema, rema, e
manhã.
Rema, rema, e
secretário.
Rema, rema, e
o meu orixá.
Rema, rema, e
Xangô.
Rema, rema, e
manhã.
Rema, rema, e
de amarraparai. No céu, provou os pés descalços no chão que se abriu. Correu de encontro ao vento do sul, tentou virar na esquina do mar, se perdeu. Seu caminho vão. Voltem para casa com medo e sem razão. Joguem suas redes de arrasto para o céu. Velem para o cais, que o mar não dá pra deixar.
Everybody go!
Não abandone,
rema, rema, e.
Não abandone o bar, não abandone,
rema, rema, e.
Não abandone. Essa noite eu quero ver o sol aparecer. Todo dia escurece no anoitecer. Sentindo frio no meio dessa multidão. Quem diz que amanhã não tem carnaval? Subi no alto, mas a vista eu não alcancei. Desceu raios e trovão, mas não adiantou. Sei que tá tudo certo com o meu caminhar.
Vem, vem,
rema, rema, e.
Macumba!
Rema, rema,
arre!